Beckett Grading Services has lowered their prices and improved their turnaround times, but is it enough to stop their downward spiral? Or were there other moves they should have made which would have been more impactful? We'll tell you what we think next. Hello, sports card investors, and welcome to another episode of Cards on the Table, and we've got a lot to talk about today. Beckett's making moves, Fanatics is making moves, and there's a bidder on a certain high-profile auction that is making some moves in maybe the opposite direction of what they should be doing. We're going to get to all of that, but first, Teapot Doug, welcome to the show.
Hello, sir.
Yeah, welcome, Doug.
Howdy.
I'm actually surprised to see a smile on your face today after the news of Kentucky having to settle for like the 18th coach on their list of choices.
It was a choice.
It was a choice. But I appreciate you persevering and joining us today because we've got a big first topic today, and that is Beckett. Now, Beckett Grading Services, unfortunately, has been on a bit of a downward spiral in terms of relevancy for the last few years. We've seen their grading numbers drop and drop and drop. We've seen SGC overtake them as the second place grading company and now far overtake them in that second place spot. And Beckett seems like they're committed once again to trying to turn this around and regain the relevancy in the sports card hobby that they have lost. Recently, they announced that they were lowering the price of certain grading submissions. Their bulk rate, their value rate now has gone down to $17 a card for grading with subgrades. Previously was $22 a card. That's around a 45 plus business day turnaround. And then there are other levels like Express have dropped as well. Express is now $79 a card, used to be $100 a card, offering 7 to 10 business day turnaround. It feels like these are moves in the right direction, but is it enough? And in fact, guys, I've got pretty strong opinion on this. I think there's some other things they needed to change instead that would have made way bigger of a difference. But we're going to get to that in a second. Teapot, what do you think of these Beckett moves? Is it enough, or is there more they should have done?
Well, I think you should say what your point is, because I want to echo your point. So I'm going to agree with what you're about to say, and we'll leave it at that.
All right. Well, let me just say it okay. Right off the bat then. I think Beckett missed the boat by not changing their grading scale. People say that the reason why Beckett has fallen off the map is because their customer service was poor during the pandemic or their turnaround times got crazy. Those things are true, but those problems existed with the other grading companies as well. That's not why Beckett has fallen off the map. The reason why Beckett has fallen off the map is because the value of a Beckett 9.5, a BGS 9.5, has consistently fallen in value compared to a PSA 10 over the last few years. And the reason why it has fallen in value is because you had this flood of new collectors who got into cards in 2020 and 2021, and they do not recognize a 9.5 of having the same value, of being the same quality as a 10. In my opinion, that is the crux of the problem Beckett has faced. And if Beckett would simply eliminate the 9.5 and make all 9.5s 10s, they would reverse the trajectory of their company.
Yep.
That's my feeling. Do you agree with what I'm saying?
I completely agree with that. Actually, I brought this up on our Spitball and Cards podcast recently, and a couple of the guys on the show agreed with me, and a couple agreed or disagreed strongly. And there were two points of disagreement. One was that they thought it would just be too confusing. Now you have three 10s. I don't think that's that big of an issue. It's already confusing. People don't understand that a 9.5 is their gem mint grade. Just keep going with it. The other thing is they thought it would upset, frustrate the holders of BGS 10 Pristines. There's not that many of those people. Like, there's way more people who have 9.5s who I think would be largely happy to be upgraded to have a 10 on their slab. So I think that's definitely the way to go. I think they do need to focus on their customer service right now, like to the max, like regain loyalty, run programs, get people on the phone, you know, who are available. Keep trying to reduce the grade to the cost to grade. They're still not competitive between the turnaround times and the pricing, even in spite of the recent stuff. I would get rid of BVG grading personally. I would just have BGS. I think that split in their brand is causing problems for vintage. And my big hot take, I think they need to either commit to subgrades or start to shift away from subgrades. And that's all about their operational efficiency. If it takes them that much more time, they can't get their turnaround times cut down, then just stop focusing on it. Stop thinking of it as a differentiator. I know that's what people like today. Reduce the cost significantly for without subgrades and go in that direction, have a 10, and then try to work something out with Fanatics. That's what I think.
I think those are all smart decisions. So you don't think just simply keeping the same grading scale, keeping the same structure, reducing prices a little bit, improving turnaround time a little bit is really going to make that much of a difference?
It might keep their current fans happy, but I think they need to do something more.
What do you think about all of this, Doug? Are we off base here on wanting the 9.5s to become 10s? Are these other changes going to do enough? Or what do you foresee that Beckett needs to do?
Yeah, I really think they missed that opportunity when it looked like they were going to unveil a grading scale change. When was it, last year at the Mint or 2 years ago at the Mint?
A little bit over a year ago.
Yeah, it looks like they were about to do it, and then they just pivoted almost instantly.
They
like
got cold feet.
We saw the display. It was ready to go.
I mean, they literally got cold feet based upon a little bit of consumer reaction within a couple-hour period on social media. It's hard to make business decisions, you know, to make a thoughtful business decision and then get a little bit of consumer feedback and immediately shift away from it. It's what they did a year ago. And then they went silent forever.
Yeah.
And then recently came out and confirmed officially a year later, we're not changing our grading scale. That whole thing that happened a year ago.
Had they done it, had they ripped the Band-Aid off and just done it then, things would be a lot better for them right now. The problem is there's going to be a huge period where it's going to be, if they were to change their grading scale today, for instance, a huge period where it would be terrible for them. Everybody with a 9.5 is going to be just incredibly upset because those values are going to fly down when there's 10s replacing 9.5s. If they had a program where you could convert your 9.5s to 10s, sure, but that's going to take forever. That's going to clog up the new submissions coming in. And I just think it would be a total mess. So I can understand some reasons why they wouldn't do it. I can see the argument for why not based on those factors. The changes they did make, though, they've lowered some pricing, but I don't think it was enough. Mm-hmm. So if you compare PSA's 45-day turnaround service at $25 a card, and then their 45-day turnaround service at $18 per card, it's $7 savings. But even on something smaller, like a $100 card, you might save $7 grading it, but you might only get $80 to your $100 on a PSA label. You're still not going to make that money back over volume. And then when you get to the express level where it's $75 for PSA and $80 for Beckett, there's no reason.
Right.
Especially with higher cards, the delta in the price of the finished product is going to be much bigger on the higher end cards, and you're going to pay more for Beckett?
Yeah. I think they'd lean into no upcharges. That's another selling point.
No upcharges is a selling point.
No upcharges is a good selling point, but you know they need to lean into that more. I agree. I mean, I think we all agree that we would love Beckett to have its prominence in the hobby restored again. I mean, Beckett is the name that I grew up with. And and for anyone who was grading cards back in like the 2000s to early 2010s, I mean, they were actually the number one player for a long time. By the way, shout out to the kids behind us. I mean, they are the real MVPs right now, trying their best to get on a Sports Card Investor episode. They have made their way onto the episode. But yeah, lots of great conversation. Look, I wish Beckett the very best. I hope that they continue to make the moves. I really would have liked to have seen them make that grading scale change. I think they missed a big opportunity. And I think the revenue that they would have gotten from the grading scale change, if they let's say they charged a cheap price, $5 for anyone who had a 9.5 to get it reslabbed as a 10, that's still going to be an avalanche of new revenue that they could have used to hire more customer service people.
No.
Then everybody's happy. Hire more graders. Improve your turnaround times. Everybody wins. Didn't work out that way, or at least it hasn't so far. What is working out, though, is PWCC's weekly auction this week, as it does every week, because they always have a beautiful, amazing cards, including a 1986 Fleer Michael Jordan PSA 9 eye appeal sticker of an E, PWCC eye appeal E. It's one of the best looking nines you're ever going to see. If you squint, it sure looks like a PSA 10, but it's going to sell for a fraction of the price. That is a nice card. Doug, what do you have your eye on PWCC?
2022 Stadium Club Soccer. It's a dual auto of Messi and Ronaldo. It's out of 5. It's in a BGS 9.5, so BGS some relevancy there. But, you know, Stadium Club, wonderful set. The two best players of the respective sport at this time. Dual auto out of 5.
It's a good one. How about you, T-Bot?
2022 Patty Mahomes Mosaic Choice Nebula 1/1 PSA 10. You know I love a Nebula. You know I love
Nebula's
Mahomes.
Nice.
It's a good card.
There you go. All of these cards and thousands more are all on PWCCMarketplace.com right now. And by the way, when you go there, vault your own cards. Use promo code SCI. You can send your cards to PWCC. As long as they're graded over $50, they'll store them for free. They'll insure them for free. It's a really convenient way to keep your cards safe and then sell them in the future with PWCC. Okay, let's go to our next topic, which is around the Data Dive video you did this past weekend. This past weekend was UFC 300, big fight night happening. You did a Data Dive video on UFC cards, and I want to talk about that, but I also want to talk about that being kind of a momentous event, which could cause card prices to swing one way or another. I also want to think about what other events we have in our future with other sports that might cause certain alternative sports to perhaps be on the rise. We'll get to that. But first, tell us about your Data Dive video.
Yeah, this was the first 100 milestone, UFC 200 in 8 years. That was back in 2016. And this was, according to many, myself included, though I wasn't watching UFC back then, like the best fight card that's ever been assembled. It was crazy. Even the preliminary fights could have been headline fights on many other weekends. And it's really lived up to the billing. Several knockouts, including one literally at the last second of the fifth round. A couple of the guys who have won, Alex Pereira, Tsarukyan, Holloway, their cards are all surging now in the last 4 days, 25 to 100% in some cases. And someone timed Arman Tsarukyan's Prism Black Shimmer 1-of-1 rookie card perfectly. It sold for $11,400 on PWCC this weekend, which is a really good price for a UFC card. So overall, it was a great fight card. Exciting to see those cards get put into the spotlight a little bit. And I think UFC cards are really a great collector choice if you're into that sport.
So let's take that and think forward a little bit, Doug, right? So UFC 300, kind of this big momentous event in UFC's history. We're seeing cards come out and spike, you know, as a result of that. What else is upcoming on the sports calendar that might give a lift to certain sports?
Well, I mean, I've talked about this a few times, but I have to keep going back to soccer for this because there are several major events that happen in soccer, some more frequently than others. Like right now we have Champions League. Champions League is every year, but it's an exciting time for the sport and the premier players of the sport. We've got Euro Cup coming up, and then we've got World Cup coming up in the U.S. In the next 3 years now, 2 years, we're going to have all of that happening. And those are massive, massive events worldwide. Those are things that we need for a couple of different reasons for that sport. We need to grow the international collector base, so something like Euro Cup will help with that. And then we need to grow Americans' interest in soccer, which World Cup will help since it's coming here. So I think the culmination of those two huge worldwide events happening 2 years apart, those are the next two milestones that I expect to see help drive that market forward. It's a market that kind of started really hot when we all caught on to Mbappe in 2018 and then has started to really slow down. I think that's when it finally starts to ramp back up here in these next 2 years. So that's what I would be targeting.
Yeah, I'm excited about soccer. I continue to remain optimistic about soccer cards. It'll be interesting to see what that, World Cup in a few years, how that does actually affect the long-term soccer landscape in this country. I'm looking forward to this summer, this dream team that's being assembled for U.S. men's basketball. I think that you are going to have, probably the last Olympic run for LeBron, maybe the last one for Steph Curry, but then you're going to have a lot of young talent on that team, up-and-comers in the NBA. The games this year are in France, so we're not, it's time different, but not like the other side of the world time different, so I think we're going to be able to see a lot of the games. I think there's going to be a lot of eyes on that. I'm going to be watching all of the games, and maybe that gives a lift to certain NBA players' cards, particularly more the up-and-comers. But who knows? Maybe even someone like LeBron gets a bounce.
Basketball hasn't been the strongest market.
It hasn't been. It hasn't been. A gold medal could actually start to really help it back a little bit, in my opinion. We'll see. We'll see what happens this summer. I'm excited for that. Another milestone is upon us, Teapot. We have now just hit 3 million. 3 million cards in our featured card database in Market Movers. Of course, within Market Movers, you can search practically any card because we've got the complete sales history from a lot of different sites like eBay and Golden, PWCC, and Heritage Auctions, and many more. But we also have our featured cards with all the charts and graphs and analysis. Over 3 million, Teapot. Congratulations to you and your team. It's by far the largest database of its type in the sports card hobby. And guys, you can try out Market Movers for free by going to sportscardinvestor.com and clicking Market Movers in the main menu bar or downloading the Market Movers app on your phone. Guys, let's get to our first mailbag topic today. This one is really interesting and kind of unexpected, something you don't really hear happening very often. It was on this show a couple of weeks ago where we were talking about how there was a sealed case of Opeachy hockey cards from Wayne Gretzky's rookie year, 1979-1980. It was discovered sealed. It was the only known sealed case, which has, of course, a bunch of sealed boxes inside, in existence. It was discovered in storage. It was sold by Heritage Auctions. It sold for $3.7 million, and we all celebrated it. The whole hobby celebrated it as a big sale. Well, there's a problem. The guy who bought it now has remorse over buying it. This guy from Ontario, Jack Arshaskai, apologize if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly.
I'm sure you know.
I probably didn't get that right at all. But Jack bid $3.7 million, said that he started becoming remorseful about this when he saw an interview with a running up bidder, or he saw some article about the running up bidder and how that person really wished that they had won it and they were sad they didn't. And he started to feel empathy. And then he started to feel like this didn't really mean that much to him. And maybe somebody else should buy it. And it seems like he almost doesn't want it at all anymore. He has already paid $3 million towards the $3.7 million, but he hasn't paid the rest of it, as far as we know. What's going to happen here? What's going on? Teapot, make sense of this for me.
Oh, regrets, I've had a few, but none $3 million. No $3 million regrets in my life. I've also got a few cards that I was runner-up on who I'd like to give a sob story to and maybe work out a deal. But, you know, it does make me wonder what this guy's play was like all along in this. It's something about it just feels kind of funky, and that could be a lot of different things. Generally, when news articles like this come out, I don't really pay too much attention to them because it's an individual person. Things change. I don't know, maybe his wife got upset, maybe he just lost a bunch of money in some stock investments, maybe he really just is like, I don't really know why I did that, you know. I had four Red Bulls and I was all amped up.
That's what he said. He literally said he had four energy drinks to stay sharp.
Yeah. It was like a weird detail. The whole thing to me just is like a little bizarre. You know, this was such a big find. It was such a huge thing for the hockey card world that to have it be like, I didn't mean to do that. Just, I don't know. It kind of leaves a bad taste in your mouth, but I don't really care at the end of the day.
It's weird. What do you think, Doug? Have you done this before? Have you had four Red Bulls and then ended up winning something you regretted?
No, I don't think I've ever had a Red Bull in my life. I don't like energy drinks, but that's beside the point. I can't wrap my head around this, to be honest with you. Every angle that I look at, I can't fully explain. If it's truly just, you know, feels so bad for this devastated runner-up, this collection would mean that much to the runner-up, for this guy it was just an investment. If that's really the problem, then just pay it off and sell it to the guy. You probably weren't that far apart in price. Figure something out. So it doesn't sound like that's it, because that seems pretty resolvable. I don't want to speculate that there's any kind of a money issue going on. I don't know the guy, and it would be totally unfair to speculate on his circumstances. But let's say, hypothetically, it was a money thing. It's like all of a sudden he's tight for the other $700,000. I guarantee you there's allegedly somewhere like 25, 27 Gretzky rookies in this case on average, right? I guarantee you someone would be willing to pay that last $700,000 on his behalf in order to, you know, take a larger chunk of that investment or something. There's ways around that. So, and I don't know, it just seems very confusing to me. There's more to this probably than what's on the surface layer of it, and who knows what that is.
It's an odd story. You know, I will say that there have been times you can get caught up in the excitement of bidding for something. There have been times when I've, you know, gotten caught up in the excitement of bidding for an auction item. But something of this magnitude, I mean, that's like, that happens to me over like $100 card.
$100, yeah.
You know, and I bought some big cards in auctions before, but I've been pretty controlled around, like, here's what I'm willing to pay and here's what I'm not willing to pay. Like, this is my where I'm going to go up to and I'm going to stop. I mean, you got to make those decisions beforehand. If you're bidding on things in the five figures, six figures, certainly seven figures, you better be deciding that beforehand. This just seems strange to me, but I hope it plays out in an okay way, because it is certainly a big box for the hobby. Let's talk about something maybe a little more positive, Fanatics Fest. So Fanatics has announced that they are doing their first Fanatics Fest, August 16th through 18th. This is gonna be a big card show, but more than just a card show. It's celebrating sports, it's celebrating collecting in general. I think all aspects of Fanatics business are going to be tied into this in some manner. So it goes beyond a card show, although cards and collectibles are going to be a big piece of the entire thing. 400,000 square feet, which puts it around the size of the National this year, a little smaller than the National was last year. And it's taking place in New York City 3 weeks after the National this year. So really tightly timed up together. They've got a bunch of stars like Tom Brady and Kevin Durant and the Manning brothers, that type of thing already confirmed to kind of be there. What do you think, T-Bot? Is this something you are like super excited to rush out to? Are you skeptical of this? How is Fanatics Fest hitting with you?
I think true to its name, Fanatics, it is a fan-first event. That's what it strikes me as. This isn't like a conventional card show. This to me is like the next evolution of what we've seen from the Mint Collective, an attempt to kind of bring in athletes, celebrities, and create an experience for people. If Fanatics is going to 10X the hobby, this is all about exposure and drawing new people in who aren't there maybe first and foremost for cards, but now they're going to get a lot of exposure to that. People are going to say, if I can go see Tom Brady, if I can go see Peyton Manning, if I can go see Kevin Durant, then okay, you know, son, daughter, whatever, we're going to fly across the country, we're going to get in the car a few hours, we're going to go check this out and see what it's all about. Knowing how they probably will put their marketing dollars and you know, leverage behind this, I've been seeing Topps ads on, you know, commercials on TV, the radio, other things. I expect that. I expect them to continue to build this out. I don't know how much impact this will have on like the East Coast National, which is the same weekend. That to me, I think, will be much more of a conventional card show. This, I think, will be a little more boutique, a little more exciting, and I'm excited to see what it's like.
Yeah, it's certainly going to get a lot of headlines. I'm excited about it as well, but yeah, a lot remains to be seen about the actual, what this experience is like. What do you think, Dougie? Excited about this? You're not excited about this? How does this fall with you?
I'm excited about it, but I don't know how much of that is influenced by, you know, working within the hobby, because this does feel more like a Mint Collective or Industry Summit type event, less of a card show. So I don't know if it appeals too much as a collector that, you know, like the National would, as much as it would appeal to guys like us who, you know, work in this industry and want to be a part of, you know, these larger industry events or trade shows. I'll be very curious to see the event, because this is probably some type of test run for doing bigger events. This could replace, you know, the Industry Summit or the Mint Collective, like I already mentioned. It could even be something they want to replace the National down the road if it does well. I know my guy EJ, who used to run Burbank, works for Fanatics events now, so he'll be in charge of this. So someone with experience is handling this. It gives me a lot of hope that it's going to be executed really well. I think it's very interesting that it's 3 weeks after the National. I'm curious if that was intentional so that people can have a direct comparison between the two. People come fresh off the National with that, you know, right in their mind, go to this event, and then it's going to be probably a big contrast between the two, right? The National is what it is. We know what it is. And then there's probably a lot of pomp and circumstance, a very flashy show around this Fanatics event. And I think they're trying to contrast that against the National, kind of a new guard versus the old guard. So it'll be interesting. Hopefully I get to attend that. I know we haven't talked about it, but here's my...
Okay.
Here's my request.
All right, Doug wants to go. Doug wants to go. He wants us to pay for the trip.
Yep, we're gonna be
Maybe we'll see what we can work out. I do feel a little bit bad for Doug, you know, that he had to get his 36th pick for basketball coach. So maybe
any trip will help you out.
We'll get you to Fanatics Fest and cheer you up. I think we can make that happen. I'll certainly be there. I'm sure a lot of us will be there.
Any good coach is going to be there. Any good coaches at Fanatics Fest that maybe I can go talk to?
We'll see what we can do. Yeah. We'll come up with something for you. There you go. You can recruit while you're up there for sure. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed the show today. If you did, make sure to check out Market Movers, marketmoversapp.com, and then also PWCC's weekly auction. It's always amazing, even better than ever this week. We appreciate you guys. We'll see you soon with our next episode. Take care.